seeing more. Beltrami County could be up to 7 inches. And by tomorrow, Wednesday, slight chance of snow before noon. Partly sunny with highs 14 to 16. Overnight low 0 to 4 below 0. We love hearing from you. You can text us this morning at 218-326-1234. What are you seeing? Some things going on in our region. You can go to the Holly Jolly Concert and Tuba Christmas at Central Lakes College at the Chalberg Theater on the Brainerd campus. That's tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And Bringing Light to Chisholm is Thursday night from 5 to 7 on Lake Street in downtown Chisholm with hot cocoa, bonfires, caroling, sleigh rides, Santa, and more.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. If you're in northern Minnesota, look out your window. If it's not snowing right now, it probably was recently, and it's probably going to start again soon. The National Weather Service says two snow systems between Monday and Wednesday are delivering a 1-2 punch. The first system brings a few inches with locally higher amounts in the Arrowhead. The second clipper, Tuesday afternoon through Wednesday morning, is a bit more intense. Most of the Northland will get a couple inches, but a narrow band will pass over somewhere from the Iron Range to south of Highway 2 and drop upwards of 8 inches. Here's Ketzel Levins, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Duluth.
But then not too long of a distance away from that, say maybe 20, 50 miles, somebody might only get like 2 inches because of the nature of this system.
The exact impacts will become clearer as the storm draws nearer. A prominent Northland DFLer's decision to remain chair of Congressional District 8 despite being charged with criminal vehicular homicide has roiled the party. The Minnesota Reformer reports Cynthia Cindy Martin's case has split Democrats. Some believe due process should play out. Others think a personal scandal will derail the goals of the party as it struggles in northern Minnesota. Martin pleaded not guilty last month. She hit and killed 19-year-old Carter Heathcock near Nashwalk in 2024 before driving away. Whether she reasonably investigated the crash as required by state law is still playing out in court. Martin is one of the most influential DFLers in the region. Martin and her attorney declined the Reformer's request for comment. So did multiple elected DFLers in the Northland. Local parties aren't controlled by the state DFL party, but state officials could call on or press Martin to resign. DFL Chair Richard Carlbaum told the Reformer, quote, "This is a tragic loss of life," but he wouldn't, quote, "prejudge the judicial process." Lee Cutler was the 8th District Vice Chair until March. He told the Reformer that he and Martin drafted an email to 8th District delegates shortly after Martin was charged, saying she was stepping down. But a few hours later, another email was sent out reversing that message. That email was also signed by Cutler, but he says he didn't write it. Martin will make her next court appearance in February. For some Deer River students, getting health care means a full day out of school.
Most of it is transportation and getting up to Cass Lake for an appointment if they have one, and that can be an all-day affair.
That's district employee Susan Nelson. She says almost half of Deer River students are Native. Many are covered by the Indian Health Service. There's an Essentia Health clinic and hospital just a mile from the school, which can make appointments really easy for some families. But even then, parents still have to take time away from work, creating another barrier to health care. A new program is trying to fix those problems with just an iPad and a quiet room. Deer River launched its telehealth program with help from Essentia in October. Nelson is the project manager.
Once they are logged in, they have their visit. I'll actually step out and I'll flip the sign over that tells everybody else to stop because there's a meeting.
In the first month and a half, there's been 15 visits between about 5 students, mostly for speech and behavioral therapy.
It's still 60 hours worth of time that wasn't taken from our staff or parents.
Initially, appointments were only available with Essentia. But last week, Nelson finalized a partnership with North Homes Children and Family Services. And she's working on setting up the system for other providers, including the Indian Health Service. The telehealth program is only the first step. The project Nelson is managing is called a school-based health center.
When a kiddo gets sick or injured here at the school, with school-based health center, we'll be able to see them in person while they're here and then do an assessment to see what else they need, or coordinate a follow-up for them to have an appointment at the clinic, or even if it's a telehealth.
The district will soft launch its health center in the beginning of the next school year and fully open to the community by the end of 2026. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
Coming up, we'll have more news from National Public Radio. Make sure you stay tuned. We're getting an update of latest Supreme Court hearing and conservative justices and what they've come up with, along with the Miami mayor's race. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Thanks for tuning in on this Tuesday, December 9th, John Latimer's birthday. Sorry, I'm going to just say it all day.
I know. I
can't help it.
I'm resigned to the fact. Mm-hmm. That's all right. I've had several, and I know how to handle it.
Yeah. We want to keep the birthdays going, so there we go.
Absolutely. Let's have more. Support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gigs and GigaZone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
We heard from Ruth from Grand Rapids asking you, John, if you know where have all the birds gone. Right before November 25th snowstorm, they seem to have moved away. Only have chickadees and one or two woodpeckers coming to my feeder ever since.
I've got the regular supply, but I'm not seeing any of the winter birds. I'm not seeing any siskins or redpolls, no evening or pine grosbeaks, although they're around. People have told me, although I haven't heard many reports of siskins or redpolls. So if you have some in your yard or come into your feeder, let me know.
218-326-1234. Stay tuned. 840, Ruth, we're going to be talking with Pam Perry. We'll talk birds and bird counts around the region. We do have a winter weather advisory that's in effect, and that begins today at about noon and goes to 3 a.m. 3 to 5 inches of snow possible.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Culver City, California.
And I'm Leila Fadel in Washington, D.C. The Supreme Court appears likely to hand President Trump another major victory.
Yeah, the court heard arguments Monday over whether the president should have the power to remove members of independent agencies despite laws that say he cannot. The conservative majority indicated they thought he should.
NPR's Andrea Hsu is listening to the arguments and joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so let's back up first and just talk about this case, which involved the firing of a Federal Trade Commissioner who then sued the Trump administration to challenge her firing. But it's not about just that, right, Andrea? What's at stake here?
Yeah, well, the FTC is one of a couple dozen government agencies that share a similar structure. You know, these are regulatory agencies, typically with three or more members representing both parties, who are appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And Congress dictated that the president can only fire members for cause for things like neglect of duty or malfeasance. And Amit Agarwal was representing the fired FTC commissioner in court. He argued the setup has a long history dating back to the beginning of the Republic.
Presidents have understood and appreciated that vital interests of the American people can be served by having constraints on the exercise of power. That is a really important part of our constitutional tradition.
Okay, but it sounds like the conservative justices didn't buy that historical argument.
That's right. They seem concerned that the separation of powers has gotten murky. You know, it seems like everyone agreed that independent agencies like the FTC and many others are not purely executive in function. Their board members and commissioners make rules and decide cases. Their actions affect people and businesses all over the country. And Solicitor General John Sauer, who was representing the Trump administration, argued that's why it's a problem that they're not accountable to the president.
That's a power vacuum. The president is answerable to the voters. They have no boss. The point is that power vacuum should not exist in our constitutional structure.
What did the liberal justices have to say about this?
Well, Leila, they took the opposite view of pretty much the same facts. Let's listen to Justice Kagan.
Isn't it problematic that what this is going to amount to is putting not only all executive power in the president, but an incredible amount of legislative slash rulemaking power and judging.
And Justice Sotomayor said that the administration is asking the court to destroy the very structure of government and take away from Congress this idea that some agencies are better off independent. Of course, Leila, you know, with the current makeup of the court, it's hard to see how that independence will stand. And in fact, Thomas Berry with the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute, says he is really confident the court will overturn the 90-year-old precedent that limited the president's power of removal. And he spoke with NPR just after the arguments.
The only real question left is how are they going to write this opinion? How broad is it going to be? What reasoning are they going to use? And to what extent, if any, will they address other contested issues?
And I know one of those issues is the Federal Reserve, right?
Yeah, and the court is going to be tackling a whole different case about that next month. But yesterday, Solicitor General Sauer did quote the court's own shadow docket order that called the Fed a quasi-private, uniquely structured entity with a distinct history. You know, whether the conservative majority shifts their thinking on that after next month's arguments, that remains to be seen. But for the moment, the Fed aside, it seems the court is prepared to give the president a lot more control over agencies that traditionally were independent.
NPR's Andrea Hsu, thank you for your reporting, Andrea.
Thanks for having me.
All right, for more on this case, we turn now to Amy Howe. She's a reporter with SCOTUS Blog and was at the court for arguments on Monday. So, Amy, was there a particular exchange that sounded most telling to you about how the court might eventually rule?
One of the exchanges, or lack of exchange, was actually really telling, which is that there was almost no discussion about a question that the justices, when they agreed to take up this case, specifically instructed the litigants to tackle, which is the remedy. If the court would uphold the removal provision and say that Trump's powers are restricted, what is the remedy for someone who is wrongfully fired? Do federal courts have the power to put that person back in office, or does that person, like Rebecca Slaughter, only get back pay? And there was basically no discussion of that, which you would expect if the court thought that there were a chance that it might ultimately uphold these removal restrictions. Justice Kavanaugh told John Sauer, the Solicitor General, that he had real concerns about this question, but then he said, but we don't need to get into that if we rule for you, meaning the Trump administration.
Were the conservatives on the court concerned about anything in particular in their questioning yesterday?
So both sides, you know, what they were really concerned about, as Andrea's discussion suggested, was the limits of the arguments that both sides were advancing. You know, and I think that those were the strongest arguments on each side. We're pointing to the potential consequences of a ruling for the other side. Rebecca Slaughter's lawyer, you know, talked about the risks not only for the FTC, but also other independent multi-member agencies that she said Congress wanted to insulate from partisanship. But on the other hand, the justices were concerned that if Rebecca Slaughter were to prevail, Congress could take large swaths of the executive branch outside of the president's control by turning agent departments like the Department of Education or the Department of Interior into these independent multi-member agencies that would be insulated from presidential control.
So, Amy, just so I understand it, is the choice you're telling me about giving Congress a lot of power versus giving the president a lot of power?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And, you know, when it comes to the separation of powers, you know, this seems like a case in which they are more comfortable giving the president that power, but perhaps carving out some particular parts that might otherwise be affected, like the Federal Reserve.
Now, under some of the theories from the justices, does every federal worker and appointee serve at the pleasure of the president?
That is the one of the sort of central questions in this case. The Trump administration and some of the justices are sympathetic to this theory known as the unitary executive theory, which is the idea that the president has complete control under the Constitution over the executive branch. And they say that should include the power to remove members of the executive branch so that the president can carry out his duties and put his policies into place.
And I guess that's part of the argument, right? That no one that works with the federal government is completely bias-free. So the federal government should be allowed at that time to appoint anyone they feel is aligned with their beliefs.
To appoint and certainly to remove.
Yeah. Now, we heard from one analyst a few minutes ago saying that the biggest question is how broadly the court rules. What are some of the options the court has here?
So Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Alito both suggested that the court could write a relatively narrow ruling that carves out someone like an institution like the Fed. And then there are also some sticky questions relating to various federal courts like the tax court and the Court of Federal Claims, in which the judges don't have life tenure and there are similar removal restrictions. And so that could be one of the options, is to say that when you're talking about an agency like the FTC and other similar agencies that exercise what the court would call a lot of executive power, that we are going to invalidate these removal restrictions and we will deal with these other things later.
Could this mean the end of bipartisanship at agencies like the FTC?
They didn't spend a lot of time discussing that yesterday, but under the Trump administration's theory, it seems like that could be in jeopardy as well. If the court were to hold in the FTC case that Congress can't place restrictions on when the president can remove someone, that sort of the logical next step would be that it also can't tell the president who he has to put on the commission.
Now, really quick, one more thing, Amy. We also heard about how this is connected to another case about firing Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook. Did Monday's hearing give you any sense of how that case may play out?
It didn't, including because Trump has attempted to fire Lisa Cook, citing allegations of mortgage fraud from before her time on the Fed. So he's saying, in effect, that he has good cause to remove her. Cook has strongly disputed these allegations. One telling sign is that the court has allowed Lisa Cook to remain on the Fed until it hears her case and issues its decision, unlike Rebecca Slaughter.
Amy Howe reports for SCOTUS Blog. Amy, thanks.
Thank you.
Miami is
not every day you get a friend sending you
all right, everybody, time
song.
To change directions. Yeah. That's why I like skating on a lake. Nobody telling me what way to skate. But I wish that music played in my ears while I was skating. That's thank you, Dr. Craig.
Celebrating John's birthday today. We've got phonology coming up next for you. We'll have more students before 8 o'clock. And we'll talk weather. Bob will help us understand what snowstorms coming through. And supposed to be cold temperatures on the weekend. And he'll help us understand all that. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Thanks for being with us this morning, and thanks for that song.
Yeah. Greg. It brought back memories. When you used to skate at the rink,
Yeah.
Or the roller rink in the summertime, and you'd be going, you always went anti-clockwise. Mm. Which I suppose has something to do with everybody being right-handed, except for me. but I always felt better when we turned around and went the other way. It was like, oh, now I can do my step-overs.
We heard from Susan from Cotton this morning, who said, happiest of birthdays to my fellow Sagittarian, Mr. John Latimer.
Oh, yeah.
Among our supposed characteristics is a love of animals, so that scans.
Yeah, that works.
First walk, Big Dog and I go out 5-ish for our necessary walk. We only saw deer prints on the trail, but our lovely gray foxes have been using the river since the edges began to freeze. Chico makes sure to thoroughly investigate new prints.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like you do too, Susan.
Sounds like exactly what I would like to do in a nice early morning like this. I saw deer tracks myself this morning across my driveway, across the fields coming out to the road. They were out. I remember one time on the mail route, I was in an area where there were some hills, and I was looking at this pristine white field that was laced with deer tracks, and it reminded me, and many of you will, this will go right past you, but in the old days, hockey players, well, nobody wore headgear. Nobody had a helmet. Nobody had anything on their heads, not even the goalies. And finally, the goalies started wearing these fiberglass masks that were sort of a replica of their face. So they weren't a cage or anything. It was just a fiberglass mask. And one of the goalies, and I want to think that it was Gump Worsley, but one, maybe it was
Gump Worsley?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or Jacques Plante, perhaps. But one of them, every time he got hit by a puck, he would put little black line with like stitches in it on his mask. And he would come out to play, and you'd look at his mask, and there'd be all these little tracks going across this field of white. And it was like, you know, if I had not been wearing the mask, where this mark is would have been a scar on my face. And
wow.
And somehow that transferred in my mind to that field full of deer tracks. I looked at that big expanse of white and those little delicate deer tracks, and I thought, oh, stitches on a goalie's face.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, God. So... yeah, Gump Worsley. Let's see. Manny Fernando, Fernandez. Well, more recently, Devin Dubnyk. Backstrom. What was his first name? I can't think. Anyway, yeah. I like the goalies, and I like playing goal because, as I structured it in my head, at least I knew they were shooting the puck at me, and they gave me pads to protect me. So I was aware of that. All of those guys out in front of me were getting hit by pucks, and A, they didn't have the protection I did, and B, they weren't expecting to get hit by the puck.
Sure.
I was hoping to get hit by the puck because that meant it didn't go in the goal. So I always liked playing goalie because I knew that they were shooting at me. I had it all figured out. But those guys that were skating around in front of me, every once in a while, they'd get dinged on the arm or the leg or someplace, and they'd be limping around afterwards. I'd be thinking, yeah, well, serves you right.
Let's take a look at the weather before we get to some more nature and phenology. Winter weather advisory remains in effect, or that begins today at noon. The other one ended at 6 a.m., so we have a little respite there, and then goes to 3 a.m., and we could get snow accumulations, 1 to 4 inches, it's looking like. I'm seeing even 7 inches. I'm going to double check that in northwestern Minnesota. Let us know, you know, did you get much snow last night? We only thought not much here.
I had about an inch and a half.
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to accurately measure it, but next week at this time, I will be able to tell you exactly how deep it was and how much water there was in it. It seemed pretty light.
Okay. And, yeah, so we are seeing in northwestern Minnesota snow accumulations between 2 and 7 inches, ice accumulations of a light glaze. And the winds, though, could be up to 45 miles an hour.
So well, good.
It's going to be some fun.
Sweep that snow off of the ice so that I can get back out on my ice boat and have another run.
There's lots of area events going on, including this is the Classic Movie Series Week at the Edge Center for the Arts with Jack Nackbar. It's in Big Fork, free and open to everyone Thursday night, 6:30. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner is the movie from 1967.
Oh,
with
I remember
Spencer
Tracy, that one, yeah.
Catherine Hepburn and Sidney Poitier.
Sidney Poitier, yeah. I do remember that movie. Programming is supported in part by the Judy Garland Museum, located on Highway 169 in Grand Rapids, featuring Judy Garland's 1920s childhood home and a gallery of Judy and the Wizard of Oz memorabilia, including the original carriage from the film. Visitor information is available at judygarlandmuseum.com. And we receive support from Klockow Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 8 years now. Their tap room is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday from noon to 6. More information at KlockowBrewing.com.
Speaking of Klockow, tonight, live music there, it's Tattletale featuring Andy Klockow. It's at 6 p.m. tonight. Thursday night, P.K. Mayo at the Ore House in Gilbert at 6. And lots more music going on, live music. You'll be hearing more about it from Malachi Coons. He's coming up at 9 o'clock for Headwaters.
time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And along those lines, we are definitely working our way into winter. Meteorological winter is December, January, and February. And we are rapidly crashing into that. I'm looking at my notes, and for the most part, it is birds. let's see, northern shrike, dark-eyed juncos, American tree sparrow. Those three were all seen by Dallas Hudson over in the Akeley area. The American goldfinch, pine grosbeak, evening grosbeak, also seen by Dallas and seen by others, especially the grosbeaks, evening and pine. I have not had either at my feeder. My feeder is primarily the usual suspects. I've got red and white breasted nuthatches, chickadees, all of the woodpeckers, downy, hairy, red-bellied, and pileated. Beyond that, at the feeder, not much. That's pretty much it at my house. I did get up yesterday morning and was walking out in the early morning hours, just probably around 6:30, and I heard the call of the great horned owl very nearby, over by the eagle's nest, which is about 100 yards from the house. And that just stirred something in me. I always feel comfortable when I have a great horned owl nearby. They are incredible hunters, and they are so secretive. You almost never see them. But this time of year, they open up and they begin a winter hooting chorus. They are getting ready to mate. Hard as that is to believe, they will be mating very soon, and the males and females talk to one another. The male typically is slightly lower in tone than the female, but it takes a fine ear, and really it takes two owls talking back and forth so you can hear that one is lower than the other. But once they establish that bond, and once they have, they usually stay together. But they will then... She will lay her eggs in January and brood them through the month, and then they will hatch. And starting in February, mom and dad will be busy feeding those babies. And they are one of the earliest nesting birds, followed by probably the ravens. But it'll start with the great horned owls, and their babies will be well on their way to fledging before the ravens even settle in and begin to think about having their babies. The ravens typically, their young are born right around the 1st of April. So they'll be getting, their eggs into the nest probably I'm not sure if the ravens are altricial or precocial, whether they hatch out of the egg like a chicken or a duck. They hatch out of the egg and they're pretty much ready to go. They don't need any tender care. They just need warmth and food, and they'll feed themselves. Other birds, like little baby robins, they're born altricial, and they're naked and blind, and they spend 2 weeks in the egg and 2 weeks becoming birds. And some birds, like the chicken and the duck, they spend 3 or 4 weeks in the egg and they hatch out as birds. So... and I'm not sure which it works for them, for the great horned owls, or the ravens. But they will be under attention. I remember one year they were almost fledged in mid-April, the ravens, and a snowstorm came and wiped them out, and that caused the parents to move the nest to a different spot. Took me another 3 or 4 years to find the nest after they moved it. But I do have a resident pair of ravens that lives on my property somewhere. So let's see. The red oak in my yard is down to its last few leaves. It seems like every day a few more leaves fall off. I suppose there's about 5% of the remaining of leaves remaining on the tree from what it was this summer. I did see out on the lake, I saw some evidence of otters, a nice track. And then beyond the track, there were some slides. And the otters and most of them stellids, the weasels, mink, martens, otters, fishers, that crowd, when they run, they kind of lope. And so their paw prints tend to be two and then two and then two. And so that kind of gave it away as an otter track. That and the size, pretty sure it was an otter running across the ice out there. While I was poking around, I came across a few green things still around. This was before this last little bit of snow, but the toothed wood fern, Dryopteris carthusiana, is still green, and I have a little spot where I have this dwarf scouring rush, and I don't know if you've noticed it in the summertime. It's not common, but it is around. It's usually in hardwood forests and shady places, and it's this little tuft of very, very thin green stems. You know the scouring rush. That's the it's the dark green unbranched stems that you see in big colonies, and this is a shorter version, 5 inches tall might be a tall one. And at first you might think they're branched, but if you get in there and kind of play with them a little bit, you'll see that they are just sort of weak stemmed and kind of intertwined, but no branches, just like the bigger scouring rush. They have no branches and they are pretty amazing. When you know, the first time you see them, you might think that some animal has gathered this material together for a nest of some sort. But if you go and look at it, you'll see that it's just this little clump of dwarf scouring rush, it's called. And it is, it's still green. If you kick away the snow and look at it, why, it'll be bright green under there and ready to photosynthesize as soon as the snow melts back. So check that out. The other thing I wanted to do this morning was just do a little rundown since I am happily celebrating my birthday today. I'm quite old, but Heidi laughs. Today is my 77th birthday. And on my 74th birthday, December 9th, 2022, we had a low of 10 degrees and a high of 33, not altogether a bad day in early December, about 3 to 4 inches of settled snow on the ground. Skating and ice boating was brief, one day on Crooked with a skater on the lake, and the second day on Grace Lake in Bemidji, and did some skating and ice boating. In 2019, on today's date, 7 inches of new snow on the ground. Also, dark-eyed juncos were just beginning to leave. And also on my birthday in 2013, sundogs, a red fox that same year in 2010, a few crows around. And the note says, a few years ago, the sound of crows was absent through most of December and January, and beginning in about 2000 or a little bit before, they began to more stick around. And pine siskins in 2010, in 2009, light snow fell on my birthday. The weeping willows were still a little bit green. 2007, I had minus 28 degrees. On the morning of my birthday in 2007. That was a brisk morning. And red squirrels out and about, 2007. Few and far between this cold morning. There's one here eating sunflower seeds, 28 below zero this morning of December 9th, 2007. Big flock of snow buntings in the Sabika area in 2006. I guess the one note that I did a little digging last night, I wondered what it was like in Park Rapids on the day of my birth. And in 1948, The high was, and this is in Park Rapids, the high was 18 above, the low was 5 below zero. There was a half inch of new snow that fell. 2 days later, on the 11th, there was 5 more inches of snow. And I lived on Big Sandy or Sand Lake, I can't remember. I only lived there for about 8 or 9 months, and then my father was a forester with the state, and they moved him around quite a bit. I have 6 brothers and sisters, and only 2 were born in Grand Rapids, 2 were born in Brainerd, 1 in Bemidji. I was born in Park Rapids, 1 sister in Minneapolis. So I guess that's 7. Anyway, moved around a lot until we settled into the Grand Rapids area in 1950. And we've kind of called this place home ever since. Not a native, but been here a while. Happy to be here, and happy to be here on a day like today when it's going to snow a little bit. And I celebrated my birthday yesterday by ice boating and the day before by skating, and it was lovely. That's the Phenology Show for this week. If you have observations you'd like to share with us, we'd love to hear from you, and especially if you have some birds that are winter birds, pine siskins, red poles, grosbeaks, let us know.
That's the Phenology Report for today. You can catch it at our website. You can also catch later this week the new Season Watch pod. Well, you'll hear some of John's report. You'll hear some student reports. We've got more student nature reports coming up before 8 o'clock. Then we talk weather with Tornado Bob. And then we talk birds after local news with Pam Perry. And we'll see what she's seeing at her feeder.
Yeah. Speaking of seeing things, good friend Rich Thorpe sent a little note along. He says, happy birthday. Ice was 6 inches thick on Hatch Lake yesterday. Crappies were inert. And he said, also heard the great horned owl last night. So they're out there calling. Get out and listen. The great horned owl is, that's the one. There's a stutter in it. It's sort of a whoo. Hoo 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 hoo. And you know, the barred owl, of course, I'd like to channel the spirit of Harry Hutchins for this one, but that's the one that goes, who cooks for you, who cooks for you all? And they should be calling as well, but primarily this time of year it's the great horned owls, and they're talking, you know, they're talking trash to the females, hoping that they can secure a date.
Thanks for tuning in today. This is People Powered KAXE. I was just taking a look here at the list of other, you know, other famous people who were born on this day, John Latimer.
Something to live up to.
Yeah.
Or down to. Any infamous people?
Joan Armatrading.
Oh, I like Joan. Yeah.
Yeah.
She had a wonderful voice. Powerful.
Some politicians like Tom Daschle. Red Fox, not a politician, a comedian. Deacon Jones on this day. And looking like, let's see, a lot of these I do not recognize here. But we all recognize John Latimer. There we go. Coming up next, we'll bring you our best wishes. Stacey Abrams, another politician born on this day, and many more. I'm going to add you to this list, this internet list of people.
All celebrities.
Right. Okay. Let's see. Let's take a look at the weather. Winter weather advisory, that starts at noon today, goes to 3 a.m. with 3 to 5 inches possible, could be more in some areas. Slippery road conditions are expected. Could be some freezing rain or drizzle early today. Take it slow. Highs 19 to 28. Southeast winds up to 25. Snow continuing tonight, lows 7 to 15 above with northwest winds 10 to 15, gusting up to 30. And slight chance of snow before noon tomorrow, partly sunny, highs 14 to 16, then lows 0 to 4 below.
We receive support from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information at oakhillseniors.com. And support for KAXE comes from Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in northern Minnesota by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. More at woodworksmn.com.
Oh, you get some pretty exciting ones here. Birthdays. Donny Osmond.
Oh, good.
John Malkovich.
I like John.
Dame Judi Dench.
Oh, wow. Yeah. She's amazing.
She's 91 today.
Woo, happy birthday, Dame Judi. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Now, I have the difficult thing. We have one birthday listed on our list for today, for December 9th, and that's just John Latimer. He's turning 77.
That cannot be.
So I am getting to play a song just for you. You ready for it?
I guess I'll have to be.
We came to raise a little hell. 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 We came to raise a little h
I ain't signing no autographs. That's my wish for you, John. And this year you get to raise
a little hell.
That's right. That's,
I will definitely live up to that.
The Reverend Peyton's,
I'll do my best.
Big damn band off their release called So Delicious. And
that'll knock the lumps out of your oatmeal.
Yeah.
And that was the type of song that would have me bringing two t-shirts to a night of dancing.
Yes.
You know, after that one, I would be like out in the car, strip off the soaking wet one and put on a dry one.
Oh, good. So I got
dancing hard.
Kind of right.
Yeah, that was a good one. I could dance to that.
And we had the gift of almost a red pinkish sky.
Oh, I know. And it's gone now. It's
now we're
dramatically
blue,
sort of. Changed.
Yeah.
But for a moment there, for a minute or two, the sky was lavender almost.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely stunning. Now it's kind of a blue gray. Not bad, but not what it was.
Yeah.
Gorgeous out there though. I like this. I like the pure white snow on the ground. I like the fact that the trees are bare and free of snow. They just are little dark outlines out there against that gray sky.
Yeah.
Lovely morning.
We got a lot of texts coming in during that song. Lauren from Talmoon says, we're celebrating John's birthday on Hatch Lake. That's from Rich and Lauren.
Oh, good.
And then Peter says, hello, KXC. Pine Grove Speaks have been here since early November.
Lucky Peter.
A couple dozen or so. Happy to have them back. They've been absent a couple of years. Cheers.
You could share them. You could just put
it's got a beautiful photo of them.
Oh, I'll come around and have a look.
And then Noah in Britt tuning in. Happy birthday, John. Watched an ermine in our yard.
Oh, so cool.
Not one, but two voles after several minutes of popping in and out of the snow, bouncing off grass and twigs like a pinball. Still have plenty of pine grosbeaks, up to 20 at once now. Also, our neighbor saw a very large bull moose just about 2 miles from our place crossing the road. I'm still waiting for my turn.
Oh, yeah, me too. I have seen a bull moose or two, and always thrilling. Boy, that gets the pulse rate up when you run into one of those in the woods. Kind of makes you think, wow, I am not at the top of the food chain, even though he's an herbivore. If he chooses to, he could pound me into the turf. He could raise a little hell on me.
Steve said that was a pretty fun song. And then we also heard from Jen Caswell and Guido Harrow saying, happy birthday, John. Tuesdays are our favorite, followed closely by Fridays. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, Jen. Guido, appreciate the note.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Already my birthday is off to a better start. I was walking out this morning and I slipped on a little patch of ice and I just about upset myself. And fortunately, I didn't do anything to my body in terms of dislocating, you know, relocating a spine or anything like that. And so I guess, you know, I'm off to a good day and off to raising a little hell. We need to turn our attention back to phenology, which is why I come here to begin with. On Tuesday mornings, not just to celebrate my birthday, but to tell you a little bit about the out of doors and to maybe, you know, bring some voices to that as well. And to that end, we have some more phenology talkbacks, which are provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. And our next report comes from the Andover Elementary class trip to Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Maisie,
DK,
Charlie,
Marlo,
Lily,
Riley,
and Natalie from Andover Elementary.
Our trip to Long Lake Conservation Center on December 1st through the 5th was cold. The low was 12 degrees below zero. This was the coldest day of the season so far, and the first below zero reading since January 19th of 2025.
The cold didn't stop us from exploring nature. One of the highlights was seeing a pine grosbeak. The last sighting was a couple of weeks ago when a flock of grosbeaks were migrating through. It is not common to see pine grosbeaks at Long Lake.
During our explorations of the woods and wetlands on foot and by snowshoe, we saw hundreds of animal tracks and trails. plus a whole lot of scat. That's science for poop.
We saw a deer bed plus deer, bunny, coyote, squirrel tracks, and mouse and vole tunnels under the snow. The fancy science word for those tunnels is subnevian trails.
Our group saw a couple of very large pileated woodpeckers on the suite, and chickadees, nuthatches, and gray squirrels on the feeders.
We saw a snow spider in the bog. The two most common types of spiders that are active on the top of snow are dwarf spiders and wolf spiders. The one we saw was a wolf spider. These are pretty big and scary looking, but are harmless to people and eat lots of bugs.
At night, we saw the December cold supermoon. It was 10% bigger than normal because it's about 17,000 miles closer to Earth. We heard the lake creak and crack loudly as ice formed. A long lake teacher measured the thickness of the ice 20 feet from shore. It is 5 inches thick. We had a great time in the snow and wanted to remind everyone to unplug, get outside, and live connected.
Oh, thank you, Maisie, DK, Riley, Natalie, Charlie, Milo, and Lily. Lots of voices, lots of observations. First below zero reading since January 19th. That's almost a year ago. Pine grosbeaks in the area. How fun is that? Pileated woodpeckers. I have a pair that come to my feeder, so that is always fun. And snow spiders, the dwarf spider and the wolf spider. And they saw a wolf spider. They call them pretty big and scary. Most people, when they see the striped fishing spider, which is our largest spider, they think wolf spider. But in truth, our biggest spider is a fishing spider. The wolf spider is, you could cover a wolf spider with a silver dollar pretty easily, and hopefully it wouldn't walk off with it. They're harmless. Most spiders are, and even those, especially those maybe that are walking about on the snow, because they're not going to be nearly as fast or active as those that you run into in the summertime. They just have a much better chance of it. 5 inches of ice, 20 feet from shore, that's plenty enough ice for people to go out and explore on the lakes. But as always, we caution you, make sure you know the lake. You know, streams, rivers, one lake that is frozen in this area that I always have a little bit of trouble going out on is Prairie Lake, because there's a river that flows through it, and that current of that river can erode the ice and make it thin in spots. So do be careful and do understand the nature of ice. Go prepared, carry some picks, wear a life jacket if you've got one, and bring a friend, and don't walk hand in hand. You don't want to both be in the water. You want one of you up on the ice to help the other one back out. Our next report comes from Chad Caddett's class at Little Falls Middle School.
This is
Emma
and Brody reporting from Little Falls Middle School.
One surprising discovery this week was a mosquito on December 2nd. We are thinking it might have been hibernating in something that was brought indoors.
We thought we may have seen our first pine siskin of the winter, but did not get a positive ID, so we are not going to add it to our bird list.
This year, our class is doing a school year bird count, and we are currently up to 68 birds that have been spotted. We are hoping to make it to 100 by the end of the school year.
Deer, rabbits, squirrels, and many songbirds look puffed up as the weather had gotten much colder and they are trapping air for insulation.
A student found a rose plant with rose hips, but it also had some spiky growths. We have never seen this before, but it could be a gall.
There are a large number of voles' tunnels and mouse tracks in the snow. The voles typically scurry around while the mice leave hopping tracks.
Both of these rodents are spending time in the subnivian zone beneath the snow, as it is much warmer and safer than the surface.
A classmate spotted a northern shrike perched high at a top of a tree and was able to observe and photograph it for several minutes.
We have seen bald eagles eating roadkill deer and have found short-tailed shrews feeding on deer carcasses.
Now that the leaves are gone, we can see black knot fungus galls on trees and branches.
We have seen and heard several small groups of trumpeter swans as they fly overhead.
That is our report for this week. Until next week, keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Emma, Brody, nicely done. What a nice, and your finish right there was absolutely stone on perfect. Well done. Lots of good observations in there. A mosquito on the second. I reported a mosquito last week, I think myself, thought it might have come in on my wood, on the wood that I used to heat my house. A pine siskin, but not a positive ID. A school year bird count, 68 birds. I wonder if that must be the number of birds seen from the school yard, from the school window, because they have a nice view of the street outside, and there's some big decorative apple or fruit bird apple trees out right outside their window that they get a chance to look at. Rose hips, spiky growths, could be a gall. We are going to have Sam Guida is going to join us next week, courtesy of Mark Jacobs, and we will talk to Sam about galls. I'm pretty sure that what they saw there would probably be a rose gall, and I have seen a number of them myself. Sam will educate us about galls, and I can't wait. Sam?
He's got a book coming out.
Yes, and the interesting thing is, Sam's father was a rural mail carrier who started listening to Phenology way, way, way back. And poor Sam is just a young kid, got introduced and caught the bug. And here he is all these years later now, a very well-studied and well-educated man, and about to inform the rest of us about some really surprising little things that often go overlooked in our world, and that would be galls.
I'm looking at the chalkboard that Mr. Caddis has with his pine siskin drawing and short-trailed shrew. And
oh, yes.
He does amazing drawings each week. If you're on Instagram,
absolutely an artist, yeah, and with chalk.
I know.
I mean, it's hard for me to just draw things with a pencil, and yet he's scraping away on a chalkboard with chalk and doing an absolutely stunning job. Just amazing.
And a great video of a hairy...
Oh, yeah.
Of a female downy woodpecker.
Yeah, and you may recall last week we talked a little bit about the downies and how the whole orchestra of muscles from the eye all the way to the tail just come together in a nice progression that allows the bird to put some real force into its blows. And 13 times a second, it grunts and inhales. So when it strikes, it goes... And then, but it does it 13 times a second. It would knock me out. If I did 13 of those in a second, I'd be unconscious on the floor. No doubt about it.
Lots of people still wishing you happy birthday coming in. Thanks so much for that. Including Michael Small saying, welcome to the 77 Club. You finally caught up. Happy birthday. And Lori in Minneapolis says, happy birthday, John. So grateful for all you teach us.
Happy to be a part of it. Yeah, it's fun. I look forward to this day every week. Not the fact that it's my birthday, that's fine, but just the fact that I can come in here and chat with you all about the world that I see and enjoy and hear from you and find out what you see and what you enjoy. That just really is satisfying, really satisfying. We receive support from North Holmes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home and school and in the community. More information at northholmes.org.
And thanks to the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community, working with friends and neighbors. Branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids, coleranebank.com, member FDIC.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.com.